has a website, jewishvoiceforpeace.org, and from that website you can click on a map and find out the chapter that's closest to you if you're interested in engaging in that work. There's also many different chapters have Facebook pages, including Jewish Voice for Peace Western Mass, and it's just JVPWMASS. If you search that on Facebook, you'll find us.
And we'll link to that from our website later today. I want to thank the two of you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
My guests have been Rachel Weber, she's an attorney based in Massachusetts, and Joseph Levine, professor and chair of philosophy at UMass Amherst, both of them also members of Western Mass Jewish Voice for Peace. We've been discussing ongoing efforts to stop discussions of Palestinian rights. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Kitsap. Like us on facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, The Struggle with Alyssa.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Village Market's 8th Birthday Block Party Celebration on May 4th from noon to 3 at Village Market on North Trenton Street across from McCoy Park. Village Market is a nonprofit of Village Gardens working alongside North Portland community members to build food resiliency through youth leadership, community farming, and good food access. The Village Market Birthday Block Party will include face painting and screen printing, a plant start sale hosted by our community gardeners, raffle prizes, food, plus a bake sale hosted by our youth leadership team, Foodworks. Again, that's Village Market's 8th Birthday Block Party Celebration on May 4th from noon to 3 at Village Market on North Trenton Street across from McCoy Park. Learn more at villagegardens.org or at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 20th Annual Global Cannabis March and Oregon Cannabis Festival on Saturday, May 5th from noon to 5 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square. That's 701 Southwest 6th Avenue in Portland. The Global Cannabis March and Oregon Cannabis Festival features a rally, bands, speakers, and vendor booths. Again, that's the 20th Annual Global Cannabis March and Oregon Cannabis Festival on Saturday, May 5th from noon to 5 at Pioneer Courthouse Square, 701 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
In Southeast Harrison Street in Milwaukee. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 7:01 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is The Struggle.
Hello, KBOO listeners. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. This is The Struggle, a weekly show that platforms people doing good work in the community so that they can tell you about what they do, why it's important, and why you might support them. So today, I have Alexander Reed Ross.
Hey, thanks very, very much for having me.
And Shane Burley.
Hey, thanks.
These are two Twitter famous writers that you should know about. They've both written fantastic books and write for Truth Out and Think Progress. Shane is Shane underscore Burley one. And Alexander is A. Reed Ross. And if y'all have questions for them throughout the show, you can tweet at them and we might answer them. So I want to bring forward the question of anti-fascism, why it's important, what its history is, and where the movement is going. Just this last weekend, there was a rally called HIM2 that was put on by some far-right people. And what they put forward was that we all, you, me, the people in this room, the people listening, should question women and people of all genders more than we already do when they come forward about being sexually assaulted or raped. Mm-hmm. And I think that is heinous. Mm. And five times as many people were there at their rally thought so too. And we had a counter demonstration. And I think it's very important to raise the banner of fighting the far right rather than shirking away from it. As both of my guests know, this is a popular position among many people who should be staunchly on our side, but because of fear, frustration, I'm not sure, they put forward that we should just ignore the right. But I know you two disagree with that. And I think we should start off talking about that. Why are they wrong in that assessment?
Well, I think that we can't really unite with the right because the right is the formation of inequality, which is everything that we're trying to fight. So the idea that we could, you know, link up with the right wing and like fight capitalism or something like that is pretty much nonsense, because the right wing, if it's not capitalist, is pre-capitalist feudalist type identity. So it has to be confronted, and if we don't do it, then nobody will.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this logic that comes up that we should maybe ignore them, that maybe they'll go away, that we're feeling your intention, but there's just no reality to that. The fact of the matter is that they want a platform where they can recruit, and the best thing that people can do is to deny them that platform, to create a large community for us that shuts it down. We don't want them there, and us coming out as a community and saying that we don't want them there is what's effective. And so I think that there's a lot of misgiving about how that actually takes place, but we should actually look at what actually effectively shuts down the right wing. We do, when we come together and we actually make a decision to do it. And so organized resistance to that is important. And I don't mean just, you know, in a park far away having a rally. What I mean is directly there and saying, no, our presence is a direct opposition to you, and that we're actually going to dismantle your functioning. We're not going to let you do what you want to do, because if they are able to win, then we lose.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's like that, the name of that movie, Sorry to Bother You, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, we have to inconvenience them, right? We can't just like stand on a sidewalk and wave a sign and then let them do whatever they want to do, right? We have to actually stop them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, when y'all talked about what shuts them down, what works, if y'all could talk about the history of how our side has been able to fight back effectively, to give people some hope in terms of what they might want to take away as a lesson and maybe duplicate.
Yeah, I mean, so that there's a long history there, right? I mean,
we got time.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking immediately of the civil rights movement and, you know, the Deacons for Defense, the NAACP, with Robert Williams, armed community defense to prevent the Klan and white supremacist organizations from crushing the civil rights movement by literally killing and terrorizing its leaders, right? So that's, in the United States, I think, the direct history of groups like Anti-Racist Action, which came out in the 1980s to confront the Klan and the Nazis, the fascist skinheads who were coalescing. There's other groups in Europe, you know, Antifascistische Aktion, right, for the Communist Party in Germany.
Anti-Fascist Action in Britain.
Yeah, AFA and the ANL, Anti-Nazi League. Different approaches for different movements, you know. There's like violent, you know, defense structure. On one hand, groups like Red Action, and then on the other hand, the ANL or Rock Against Racism, very mainstream groups trying, and movements really trying to just organize mass groups of people to come out and oppose racism through public manifestations, rock concerts, you know.
Yeah, and I think there's a history of a spectrum here, right? So, like, there's, you know, on the one hand, maybe more distant protests, ones that bring out large sections of people, and then there's ones that are more confrontational on the other hand that directly try and interfere physically with whatever is happening. And in a lot of ways, it takes kind of that whole broad spectrum, right? Like, it's going to require large masses of people. It also requires people that are willing to disrupt those things. It requires kind of a whole range. And so what a lot of developed kind of in post-war Europe, when we started seeing like what we called like neo-fascist parties, neo-Nazis, they're trying to reclaim this, redefine themselves, find a new space for them, was that they were again trying to take a public stage, and people are coming out and figuring out organized ways of dismantling that. So is it blocking them in the streets? Is it shutting down their meeting? Is it also doing other things? Is it education too, right? Is it going after their key arguments? You know, if they're going to build like an anti-immigrant sentiment, we should start talking about immigration in our communities. Yeah. You know, if they're going to start creating like all these like canards about queer folks in the 80s and later or trans folks in the 90s and early 2000s, then we need to be talking about those things. That's an anti-fascist organizing too. And so I think like all of those things together ended up kind of being ported over to the US and the growing neo-fascist movements there and people trying to make sense of them. So right now the word Antifa is kind of used as a capsule, but it's not, you know, it's one particular type of confrontational organizing that's you know, obviously seen a lot of effectiveness, and there's a lot of other types too. But it's used as a blanket to kind of insult the anti-fascist movement when it's actually really diverse and also really effective in the fact that it's actually seen a lot of measurable gains by shutting them down.
Excellent. Well, go ahead.
And let's also talk about intra movement solidarity against fascism, because the thing that fascists like to do is try to intrigue within different movements, like the environmental movement, for example, and spread anti-immigration stuff. And anti-fascists within those movements, you know, might not be completely organized in one way or the other, but will work to kick the fascist influence out of their respective groups. So that's an important aspect of anti-fascism that is often unacknowledged or unrecognized, but people do it every day.
All right. Well, I want to get into some of the more sort of overtly connected movements where... And I think it's important that we acknowledge this and that we have an answer to this. People will say, and they often do, even to me, that Proud Boys, Patriot Prayer, some of the other right formations that are sort of alt-right or fall under that umbrella that read Breitbart and, you know, like, the, like them, they say, we are not fascists. And why would you be... imposing on us your ideas and calling us something that we don't identify as, yet there doesn't seem to be, at least in my opinion, and, you know, I think we should be able to be critical of ourselves, there's not a forthright enough answer to those people who, some of them really are confused and genuinely don't think of themselves as fascists. What do we have to say to that? What should we be saying?
I mean, I think we need to look at what they do, not just what they say, right? So Patriot Prayer is a really good example. Patriot Prayer, for those who aren't in Portland, is this kind of far-right Trumpian group that formed around Trump's election in Portland, started having these rallies. And what became really apparent really quick was that despite what maybe the core organizers say that they believe, they have white nationalists there. They have neo-Nazi skinheads that were there. They had open racist alt-right folks that were participating. And when confronted about that, they did nothing about it. And instead, they continued to push anti-immigrant rhetoric, anti-Muslim rhetoric, homophobic rhetoric. And so it was what they actually did functionally. Now, I'm sure there's some people that are just more like conservative types, right?
Yeah,
maybe
sure.
They don't go for full right. But in a way, that doesn't matter because they have functionally been the most effective organizing tool for the far right. And that's what really matters. Mm-hmm. Are they going to do something about it? Are they going to stop that from happening? They're not, so somebody has to.
Okay.
And we also just have to oppose violent right-wing extremism, that's taken over the streets. It doesn't matter if it calls itself monarchist or fascist or, who knows what. They could be leprechauns for all I care. But, what they're trying to do is perform this sense of nationalism that is blocking other people from their rights, from equality, from full equality. I mean, they've been coming out and protesting Pride unsuccessfully, protesting Planned Parenthood, So what they're doing is creating physical crises for people who are marginalized and vulnerable within our society. They are opening the door to white nationalists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Proud Boys, you mentioned the Proud Boys, their Indiana leader was Brian James, who founded the Vinlanders Social Club, was a former Klansman and outlaw Hammerskin. So, I mean, they've got, and then after they, as some people started talking about Brian, he formed American Guard, which is a violent white supremacist skinhead group that joined the Proud Boys in the streets trying to wail on, and Tiny was there wailing on people in Providence, Rhode Island, just like a couple months ago. So, they're rallying with fascists and that's all part of what they do. They're trying to create the big tent. And
okay. Yeah, and they will use the cover of all kinds of identities and histories. That's always been true. That's not a new concept. Mm-hmm. We were covering skinhead meetings, 10, 15 years ago, and there were folks of color that would sometimes come to them. That wasn't maybe the usual thing, but that's not the usual thing for the Proud Boys, but they're using it as a smokescreen to try and confuse people
that's
what's
wild.
Going on.
Yeah.
And so the reality is that the Proud Boys or Patriot Prayer are a violent street gang that's basically attacking marginalized communities. Yeah. That's the fact of the matter, and it doesn't matter what they call themselves, what t-shirt they wear,
yeah.
What they look at in the morning, this is what they do. Mm-hmm. And so I think we should definitely look at what are the facts of the matter, what is actually the result of their organizing.
Okay. I've just realized that we sort of jumped the gun a little bit and we're 15 minutes in. I want to point to your two book titles, and I didn't even plug them, and I'm sorry. So Shane's book is called Fascism Today, What It Is and How to End It. A little wink at Trotsky. Lovely. And Alexander's is Against the Fascist Creep. And being that you two have written so much scholarly work on the subject, for confused or sort of just not that well informed yet people, can you give me an elevator pitch or not a pitch? Whoa, an elevator speech about what fascism is? Elevator, please.
I'll do that.
Okay.
So I guess I use basically two tent poles to describe it. One is this belief in inequality. Most of the world tries to deny that inequality exists. That's kind of the neoliberal project. But fascists don't just refuse to deny it. They think it's sanctified. They think people things should be unequal. People are unequal. Societies are unequal.
Okay.
And then the other side, it's that we're wrapped up in our identities and they control us. Basically, it's essential identities. That they're identities that choose us. We don't choose them. And so it's either race, gender orientation. There's a number of different kind of poles of it, but basically it's defining. And when you match those two together and you kind of create a populist upsurge mythic movement around it, that's when you have fascism.
Yeah, it's really like the white identitarianism that's really taken off most recently, and it's the kind of vogue of the new synthesis of fascists. Because what they can do under this idea of white identity politics is, first of all, try to mock the left,
yeah,
and draw in some of those left-wing kind of ideas, which furthers their sort of semi-populist approach to we are the natural elites, right? So they establish the big hierarchy with them at the top by gleaning ideology from the left in a really disingenuous way.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I always thought was really telling is that they're not just kind of critiquing the left, they are a critique on the left. So if we talk about identity politics, yes, they'll do it better. You know, if we're there organizing the working class, they'll talk to the working class. Mm-hmm. Like, they will always find the weak points of the left, and they'll take our tools and our methods, and they'll use them against us.
Excellent. Yeah, that was exactly where I hoped you would go, and I knew you would go. You did not let me down. Yes, I think it's important to bring up that what, from my understanding, what the right hopes to do, or the far right hopes to do, is to be able to have an answer to areas that the left is really lacking and is unable or unwilling sometimes to really take up. And Alexander, you talked about taking on a populist approach and gleaning ideology from the left. And particularly, I want to talk about this in terms of their anti-PC championing, where I think they are very adept in being able to identify that many people are exhausted by what I might call sort of university identity politics, right? The heavy focus on interpersonal dimensions that are representations of an unequal system, but really don't make any move toward changing the system itself. That's my critique of it. Anyhow, I think that I'm seeing the right use this anti-PC politically correct pivot in order to advance a lot of their ideas, and being able to draw people in and sort of say, aren't you so sick of being told about how you're so privileged and you're so problematic, and that, you know, you need to be called out on your bad behavior? And I think that there are many people that say, yeah, mm-hmm, I really am. Yeah. It does bother me. And I know that the reason that they can reach them is because we actually don't have a very good answer to those people. And many of my friends, I love them dearly, they come from oppressed backgrounds, and they take up the mantle or the call that says, it's not my job to educate my oppressor or to make them like me. And I think that's correct and that's righteous. I don't know if it's strategic. Mm-hmm. And I hope to be able to develop a cadre of people from oppressed communities who will be able to have something very sharp to say to those people, because I just don't know if shooing them away and saying, whatever, you're problematic and F you forever, is very helpful. In fact, I think it can be detrimental, because as y'all were pointing out, the right is able to pick that up and run with it. Can you talk about what you think might be a possible solution or something toward a solution for that?
Yeah, you know, there's this old IWW poster. It's like it has a worker and a Klansman talking to him, and it says, if you're not talking to your coworker, somebody will be. You know, at one point, the left gave up organizing the working class in a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to go back to talking about where people are at, talking about how to confront those things and how to not just abandon whole swaths of folks, but mm-hmm. to use it as a point of critical struggle and to use those parts as places to struggle with people to a degree. I don't think we should give up defense and also holding people accountable and holding standards up.
Sure.
Because we can do both those things. But I think what the right does in a lot of degrees is take like angst, like you were saying, that yeah. people have about this, or their inability to navigate what is essentially kind of a university language, or like an upper class language sometimes, and the feeling alienated by that sometimes generationally, and then using it to say, see, they're not with you. We will be. We will speak to that. And if we're not willing to speak to especially people from the working class and confront those issues with them, then we've kind of lost that.
Mm. And it's not only the working class, too. I mean, we have to take into account things like 4chan, meme culture, because that's something I think that the far right took and ran with, hacker culture, Weave, you know, those types of people. And meanwhile, a lot of the left sort of broke off, especially the left that was really skilled with memes, and sort of formed like tanky sort of weird sort of cliques that became really alienating to a lot of people at the same time. Just, you know,
a lot of gulag memes,
memes and all that kind of stuff. So I think, like, in order to be more relatable and to use those kinds of tools, you know, we have to actually sort of break out of sectarianism, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, when Obama was in power, a lot of people on the left thought, oh, we could be a little more comfortable now. We can take for granted a lot more. Mm. We're on the move, you know, we're taking the streets every other week and all that kind of stuff. And as a result, there was a kind of a weird thing that happened in the radicalization process that developed these kinds of like siloed political structures. Mm. And I think right now we have to be in a process of breaking those down and reforming a kind of mass movement.
Can you talk about those political structures that were siloed?
I think there were more kind of MLM groups emerging.
Can you say what MLM is?
Oh, sorry. Marxist-Leninist, Maoist groups. Yeah. I think we saw especially... Okay, so this is something kind of crazy that involves like political geography. We saw tensions increase between Russia and the United States. And a lot of leftists in the United States, anti-imperialists, believed that this meant that we should support Russia because Russia might be helpful as an anti-imperialist sort of counterpower. And then we saw Russia and RT and Sputnik in 2013 dually or reciprocally support these kinds of left-wing groups, anti-imperialist groups. Mm. And so what we saw with RT and with Sputnik was a convergence of the US left and far right wing commentators coming together to try and build a populist movement of, say, anti-imperialists and right wing isolationists who supported Russia's sort of geopolitical interests, and as a result have steadily kind of isolated themselves from mainstream discourse in the United States.
And it's your position that this is what gave rise or helped give rise to some of the right's ascension? Is that...
Well, I don't think that there's much of a doubt in my mind that the alt-right took advantage of RT Sputnik to spread. You had people like Jared Taylor, Richard Spencer, Matt Heimbach all going on RT, getting platforms there. At the same time, I think that they have developed a sort of a fringe fusion of left and right. Mm. So. Okay.
Well, unless you have, Shane, unless you have something to go off of this, I'd like to ask you a question. Okay. So, again, I think I jumped the gun a little bit. On this show, I like to remind myself as often as I can, and my guests lovingly, that much of what we know and say, many people do not know and do not say. So I want to not assume. So actually, alt-right, the alternative to the traditional right. Mm-hmm. Can y'all, again, elevator, right? What what is the right that they're griping about, and why do they feel like they need to be an alternative to it, and what makes an alternative?
Yeah, I mean, the right they have a problem with is the GOP, and basically conservatism as an idea. So conservatism is
GOP, sort of, the Republican Party.
So it's basically built on kind of three platforms: free market economics, social conservatism, and kind of Christian ethics, and also like a hawkish foreign policy. And those sorts of things are much different than like a belief in human inequality. Like you could theoretically be like a libertarian and say, eh, no, all people are created equal, but I still think we should, you know, bomb other countries and, you know, cut taxes and things like that. And they're like, no, we're at a totally different starting point. Our starting point is white identity. Our starting point is like, you know, the essential traditional family, things like that. We won't even get into like even to engage in your version of politics is to give up our principles and our completely different starting point. So when they created an alternative right, 2010-ish, they basically wanted to have a white nationalism that was way more radical than whatever the Republican Party could do and say like, no, we're starting over. We're totally not a part of that. And we're going to be something all our own.
So also Richard Spencer, right? Like he is known for being the person that sort of popularized it and put it forward as like a national movement that people should rally behind. He is the guy that famously got punched in the face in Washington, D.C. And I was one block away when that happened. The longest block of my life that I couldn't see that with my own eyes. So I want people to have a conception of that. So thank you for laying it out, because where I think many people are getting tripped up is in calling conservatives Nazis. And while there may be some overlap, I think it's not a good idea to lump them in. So I wanted to be able to draw that out, to be able to say like, why is the alt-right calling themselves the alt-right and not just the right? Mm-hmm. So thank you for being able to tease that out.
It's also anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the huge, the big part of it in foreign policy terms is the notion that Israel should be defended. And this goes back to Pat Buchanan, you know, what's called the paleocons, who opposed the neoconservative agenda from the Nixon administration to the Bush administrations. And, you know, you hear people like Richard Spencer say, well, actually, you know, the state of Israel is a great example of an ethno state. But, well, you know, is. Like... Well, we
sadly.
Can't. The thing is, we can't take them at their word that they actually support the state of Israel.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. No. Don't believe anything they say.
Yeah. And when you have people like Steve Bannon who are like, yeah, totally support Israel and like part of the Judeo-Christian tradition and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to look at the fascist movement as a process and not just like, and that's why it's so important to oppose them now. And not cohere. Wait until you have like brown shirts in full uniform, sure. You know, in the hundreds of thousands.
About fighters for equity in a black education elected to the school board. That's just one.
Well, on that note, I can't believe that we are out of time. We might need to have a part two. We might need to have a part two of this, y'all. It's just been incredible.
I'd love to. Okay.
Yeah, Ashley Henderson, Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons, thank you so very much for joining us. Appreciate
you.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you, Margaret. I love you, Zahara.
Okay.
I love you more.
All righty. A lot of love going there. Today's show produced by Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank our Sojourner Truth team, our intern, Julianne Tweeten, and our assistant producer, Ramiro Funes.
KABU Community Radio is hiring a development director. This 32-hour-a-week position develops and implements the yearly fundraising plan, develops promotional and press materials, and supports the anti-oppression work of KABU. Send a cover letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kabu.org or send to KABU Development Hire, 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon 97214. Please answer in the cover letter the question, why is KABU important? Deadline to apply is Sunday, November 25th at midnight. More information on the development director position is available at kbu.fm/development-hire-2018.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Top Dog Underdog, running Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through December 1st at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee.
Fighters for equity in black education elected to the school board.
Well, on that note, I can't believe that we are out of time. We might need to have a part two. We might need to have a part two of this, y'all. It's just been incredible.
I'd love to. Okay.
Yeah, Ashley Henderson, Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons, thank you so very much for joining us. Appreciate
thank you.
You
so much.
Thank you, Margaret. I love you, Zahara.
Thank you.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Roots in Harmony Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective benefit on Saturday, May 4th at 6 p.m. at the Wayfinding Academy in Portland. Roots in Harmony is the third annual benefit show and silent auction to support the Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective. There will be live music and theater performances, a seasonally inspired meal, a silent auction, and more. Again, that's the Roots in Harmony Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective benefit on Saturday, May 4th at 6 p.m. at the Wayfinding Academy, 8010 North Charleston Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Wild and Scenic Film Festival on Saturday, May 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Clark College in Vancouver, Washington. The Wild and Scenic Film Festival will be screening a collection of 9 of the best short films from the 2019 festival. Before the screening, there will be a reception with beverages and light food and a raffle to support the Cascade Forest Conservancy. Again, that's the Wild and Scenic Film Festival on Saturday, May 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Clark College, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KABU Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kabu.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KABU Community Radio.
excuse me, you're listening to KBOO in Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio dial. My name's Lenita Duke, and I'm stepping 9 minutes early into the time slot of my colleague. Oh, she does such a wonderful show, The Struggle. Now, one of the reasons why I want to start early is that I have some excellent news. So this show, and when I say this show, I mean the members of KABU, I mean the supporters of KABU, I mean the staff down here at KABU, and I mean all the programmers here. But from the grassroots, this show, we're a local magazine formatted show. We were awarded the West Coast Hometown Media Award for audio programming, independent producers. Because that's what we are. We are independent producers down here. And KABU, thanks to listener-supported KABU, you allow us a format to express our creativity. Now, that happened to us on the West Coast. Now, on the East Coast, at the end of the month, we were also, we'll be in this festival called what's the name of this festival? The People Media Award of Excellence. Now, that will be in Harlem, New York, at this fire station, the big film festival. And this show, and the one I'm getting ready to play right now, will be presented. I'm really happy about that. So, again, the winning segment was this show dedicated to Curtis Mayfield, his album Superfly. We're going to play that. And this show included political satire by myself, by me, Lenita Duke. And I like doing those little political satires. I think sometimes they compliment a prophet of rage. Now, the prophet of rage, he talked about homelessness. Great episode. Also, our mental health person talked about suicide. But at the same festival in New York, dig this, one of our segments got noticed, and that's because I took all our faith report segments and put them together. That also will be presented at the end of this month in New York. So we're going to celebrate that. I hope you celebrate that with us. It's a win for all of us down here at the station, for all the people that supported us during Pledge Drive, for all the people that renewed their membership. I know this sounds like pledge drive, but it's not. This is what happens when you pledge. We're able to create. So without further ado, I'm going to start playing certain segments. So let me start with the Faith Report. Now, this was an interesting segment. It's part of Grassroots News from the Grassroots, which is the name of this show. And again, we took all these segments of the Faith Report, and I think some of them are pretty radical. Now, full disclosure, the reporter on here, the person that writes these pieces, is Nia Gray. She's a reporter for Grassroots News. She was raised down here at KBOO. When I die, she's going to take over Grassroots News because Nia Gray is my little girl. She's my daughter. And I can't tell you how proud I am of her, how she's developed her own take on the world. And that's what we want our kids to do. We would like them to be carbon copies of us, but we want them to be better than us. And Nia Gray is a much better producer than I am. So here's her Faith Report. It's about 16 minutes. You're listening to KBOO in Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio dial. I'm going to go ahead and play this. And again, this Faith Report will be presented in New York, May 30th to June 1st at the 8th Annual Public Media Award of Excellence Festival. Nia made it, and not just she made the show, but all of us made the festival. Please stand by. You're listening to From the Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and political commentary. Featuring licensed mental health counselor Cheryl Jefferson, Faith reporter Nia Gray, political commentary from the Prophet of Rage, and calling in from the planet of rhythm and blues, Professor Soul. From the Grassroots, I'm your host, Lanita Duke.
This is Nia Gray with Grassroots News with your Faith Report. As followers of Jesus, we have the opportunity and obligation to speak up and address injustices against all people. Watching the news today is overwhelming, from police brutality in the Black community, the lifting of the veil of systematic sexual abuse in the entertainment industry and the Catholic Church, to the dehumanization of migrants and refugees. Speaking up against injustice in the name of our faith is an area that the church really needs to work on. We can't just live in a bubble and ignore groups of people just because we don't agree with their lifestyle or use the law as an excuse. In Jesus's day, there were many laws and customs, for example, healing people on the Sabbath, which Jesus happily broke to do what is right. A great example of the battle of personal interest versus standing up against injustice is the story of Esther, who King Xerxes of the Persian Empire chose as his queen, not knowing she was Jewish. While she was hiding her true self, a plot to kill all the Jews living in the empire was being concocted by a guy named Haman. Esther and her family were Jewish, so this plot surely meant that they would be killed. But Esther's cousin Mordecai begged her not to remain silent about her heritage so that she could save the Jews from persecution. For he believed that God put Esther in her position of royalty at this period of time for a reason. Eventually, Esther chose to reveal herself to the king and the plot to kill her people after all. In the end, the king showed Esther mercy and ordered Haman to be hung from the very gallows that were built to kill the Jews. You know, we may never be asked to make such a drastic decision. However, we face the choice to speak out against injustice or remain silent every single day. God puts us in situations and in the company of people that we really can have a positive influence on if we just speak up. Drawing from the life of Esther, I hope this will encourage us as people of faith to speak up and make a difference. This has been Nia Gray from Grassroots News with your Faith Report.
Amen. 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 Amen.
Coming up on From the Grassroots, our faith reporter, Nia Gray. She discusses disengagement from organized religion, especially the Black Church. All this and more on From the Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and political commentary.
Religious disengagement is growing within the Black community, especially in the younger generation, the millennials and younger. African Americans under the age of 30 are three times as likely to eschew a religious affiliation as African Americans over 50. And this shift is crucial because all churches will have to close their doors if they don't find a strategy to engage young families and young people who are the future of the faith. There have been complaints with the millennials that the Black church has played a backseat to social issues that are important to them, issues like the Black Lives Matter group growing, but you never really see any Black church leaders on the forefront of that movement, as well as issues of sexism and homosexuality that have been addressed in the more mainstream limelight. The Black church continues to not have these conversations openly with the community.
So what you're saying is the Black church really hasn't shown up for any of these social issues.
They have been surprisingly absent.
They have been surprisingly silent.
Correct. They've been silent on the immigration issue, the recent issue of the Trump administration ordering the separation of families at the border. Not a lot of presence in the Black Lives Matter or any type of anti-gun and anti-violence movement that we see. And they just